print commands in the right place.
That's so that'll make a lot of difference in the number of your pages.
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's about 2 to 1, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So that's the whole reason why I had to go recalibrate
yeah.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
Is depending on which way you're going.
Because I'm 17 or else if it's a week, like this one.
What's 10 to 17?
Is there 17
anywhere in between?
I see.
That's
the problem.
Yeah,
this is nice. Like, Lanny gave us a one-page assignment. No bibliography.
No cover sheet.
I got
700 words.
8x10 microfilm.
It's not crowded.
The
problem is the italic M involved.
Yeah. Character of this next set coming up pretty much like what we've seen before, except that there'll be more of an emphasis on the asking grammatical questions. In other words, just asking you about the grammar rather than a whole paradigm structure. In other words, this test won't be having so many paradigms or things where you have to manipulate vowel words and that kind of thing. It'll be more asking you questions about what happened, and it's kind of a general overview. And then there'll be translations translations from Hebrew to English and English to Hebrew like normal. So that's just kind of the general gist of it to get you prepared. So pay attention to the grammar of what's going on, what stated verbs do and that kind of stuff. What are these things like? What's the peculiarity of these words when they get the suffixes, and rather than writing the whole paradigm, just kind of tell me what the problem is. That's kind of the approach into it. So chapter 21 started out with stative verbs, and these are verbs that we've only dealt with these primarily in the perfect here. I guess we've dealt with prototypes types to some extent in the imperfect, but they're says, in addition to verbs like those already studied, there's a much smaller group with theri or colon, the final stem syllable, the perfect. The majority of these verbs are stative. That is, they denote the state of the subject rather than describing an action. So that's the essential feature of the stative verb. It denotes the state of the subject rather than describing an action. they're translated by mainly by adjectives in English or with an auxiliary verb of be or become. So, kaved is he is heavy, was heavy, or has become heavy. Zakain is he is old, was old, has become old. So that's the basic translation. then about the only other thing we have to be concerned about is the forms of these things. And we have several examples here on the next page of the various types you will encounter. You have kaved, which is probably your main type, and its paradigm is very much like kasav, except you got that theory. And once you look at kaved, then all the rest of the forms are pretty much the same as it would be with kasav. So nothing really radical there. Then ma'yare, to be afraid, that's very much like mata. And the major difference is that you have teri in the second position instead of kamas, where you had in mata. But that same basic situation there, you get a longer vowel than teri there because, well, I guess there really isn't making a difference here. It stays all the way through, though, the paradigm is because of aqueous knowledge. Mate to die, that's a little bit more strange because it's a hollow verb. So, mata, 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 mati, so forth, I guess it's just a matter of looking at that paradigm. You're becoming familiar with it.
I have a question that's kind of awkward. It's a little bit on these hollow verbs.
Yes.
Now, here, when he transliterates it, he doubles the T. Whereas, I forget what it was, a com, I looked at com. And there, the M doesn't get doubled. Or there's no doubling when he translates it. It's the same thing as augations. Or on T, I guess, com T and com T, com and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
Is it because of the short syllable or the short, I mean, the closed syllable? Or is it just a convention that he's doing that? Or?
That's a good question.
Is there any reason? I mean, it doesn't matter the pronunciation, but.
Yeah, it is a question as to whether he's doing it right in this particular work. Because that could be just considered the towel, you know, the doggish, I thought he's waiting here. I don't think it's just because.
It must be just because of the tau. Maybe it's because of the tau ending. 59.
Oh, yes. Well, that could be.
Ending,
yeah, that's
right. It over. And
yeah, you add the tau to the tau. That's what's happening. So you get the doubling. That's the reason for that one. Yeah. See, but like if you cut off T, I mean, cut off, you've got tau as an ending, and then you've also got tau as the last letter of the stem. So those two taus superimpose in the word to get stuff on. Okay, whereas with com and so forth, you don't need to go ahead and have the T on there.
It's more of an assumption than anything else, though, really, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's something to it, but.
But you see, if you don't make that assumption, then you have the stem being just named.
But,
I mean, you know, it's
right.
One thing to have a two consonant stem, but it's another thing to have a one consonant stem.
But, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So you almost have to do that.
Or you can just say that it doesn't take the
tau. Oh, yeah, you could say that too if you wanted to.
Yeah.
But that would be a more exceptional that there's a aversion to trying to break up the endings on the verb. Okay. That's probably what it'd be, see, because Yeah, it's just what's happening. As you can see, we normally expect cathode, and like for you, you think cathode is a long verb, and you expect just a comet. But here you get comet A. And then the two taus are super, the tau would be the ending. But and then you have a tau at the end of the mate also, and those two are superimposing, and you're getting a Babish forte there. The only thing unusual about this particular form is you got a hey at the end. You didn't have a hey normally in that section. But you can still tell what it's got to be pretty much. We made a note of that earlier.
That was used in a modern thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Growing it, yeah, it's going to be functionally from modern, and it doesn't come up here. Okay, then Yakol to be able, we just got a hole now in the second position instead of the Zeri. Other than that, it's pretty straightforward. And Borsh, this one, a little strange in that wow appears in the second person, I mean, third person feminine singular, Borsha. You get the wow appearing again there. Kind of the remnant of that olive verb, but we'll see some more of those clouds when we get the imperfect forms on anything. So I guess just looking at the paradigm is about all I can say. Know that at least as much as you can. Grammatically, this next section is interesting because you find an adjective, most of these stated verbs have a corresponding adjective form, and that adjective form is very often the exact same form as the stated verb, and the first three of those are exactly the same. Then tahor and taher are different, and karev, karav, but mate, male, katon, katon, they're all the same. So that generates a potential ambiguity in the masculine singular, only in the masculine singular. In the masculine singular, there would be no way to tell for sure whether you're looking at the stated verb or whether you're looking at the adjective. So if you had zakein ha'ish, that could either be a verbal form, the man grew old, or was old, or became old, has become old, or adjective, the man is old. Or then that could be the man was old, too, the whole context is past. But it doesn't make a whole lot of difference. I mean, if you make a mistake on this one, it's not going to be a gigantic theological consequence. But then, if the subject is feminine or plural, the distinction is always clear, because the forms are different. For example, Zakana Ha'isha, the woman grew old, but Zikena Ha'isha, that's the adjective form. So, remember, with the adjective, you get the shortening and the adding and ending. With the verb, you just have a kind of a regular verb pattern. So they end up being slightly different here. Then, in other words, one of them you get pretonic reduction, the other one you get protonic reduction. And then in the plurals, zakanu, that's pretty easy to identify, ha'anishim, versus zakenim ha'anishim. So those are pretty easy to identify. And the feminine plurals would be likewise. So there's no ambiguity, of course, in the verbal and adjective sense. Both are different in form. So both the verbs and adjectives may, because they're meaning is true with min in a comparative sense. So you may use this min idiom either with the stative verb form or with the adjective as you've normally seen it. So kaveh ha'ish mimeni, the man became more important than I. Now, of course, that could be ambiguous there, because kaveh is the same form for the adjective.
But it also be the man became heavier than I. Like,
oh, yes, yeah, yeah. If you're talking about diet, yeah, it could be, very definitely. Man became heavier than I.
Did they have a different word for fat, or what they mean?
No, I think they'd use the same word. They had, I think they had word for just like being fat or something like that. But if a man was heavy in weight, yeah, they would use this.
Kind of like when Elias was here. God be glory.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he had the right image of him. Okay, stated verbs from geminate roots are inflected as follows in the third person. This is one you have to watch, keep your eyes on, because the geminate root ones are slightly different here. If you look at Savav and the paradigm back in section 68, whatever page that was, yes, it's on page 63. You had an express doubling in those three forms of the third person. See, with Sabah, it was Sabah, Sabah, and Sabahu for those forms. But with Tom, you get just a name, and then you get a double name for Tama and Tamu. You get a double name. I mean, the name was Dagesh, instead of writing the name out both times. And then the third person, you just get one name, period. No Dagesh or anything. So that's a bit unusual. But the rest of them are, the rest of the inflection is just like Sabah. So in other words, the rest of it would be Tamotha, Tamoth, Tamothi, etc. Instead of the rest of the pattern, we get the poem back, or if you have a poem following, it gets a different root. So the rest of it's pretty easy to follow. Everybody see that? See what the difference is? In other words, you might, if this was exactly like Sabah, you might expect Tamam, Tamama, Tamamu. But instead you get Tam, Tama, Tamu. And the rest of the paradigm is like Sabah. Okay, then your nouns Av, Ak, and Tet have a peculiarity in that they get a heric yod in the construct singular before suffixes. So you get a heric yod on them, even though it's not a heric yod, it's a normal first person singular suffix. And there can be a potential confusion, especially with T there. The form T is the same for the construct and for the first person singular suffix on it. So mouth of something and my mouth turn out to be the same form. Of course, the difference would be that mouth of something would have a word following it absolutely. So you pretty well tell what that is. Other than that, the suffixes are slightly different because you have a heric yod vowel before them, and so they tend to lose the vowel. If they have two syllables, they tend to lose that vowel in front of them. I guess the best thing to do is just compare this with suffixes you saw on two stack here, wherever that is. That first encounter with these suffixes was in chapter 18 or something like that. No? 20. Av, for example, we have Avdi for the construct, but you get a kata patak instead of a consonant for syllable. But then with the suffixes on it, it goes back to the commas. So Avi, and then you get Avi, Avika, instead of having a shawa, you see, with Susa, with Susaka, now it's Avika, as shawa's gone. Avi, again, instead of Susaik, so the suffix changes a little bit. One thing here, you've got Aviu and Avihu, two forms for the third person masculine singular suffix. Whereas you just had Susol before, you have Kola. So neither one of these are quite the same as those. And Aviha, Nomatik in the hay, and the comet's on the hay instead of before it. It's a little bit different. Avinu instead of Susainu, so forth. See, the rest of these, well, pretty much Avihem, Avihem. So you get Avihem and Avihem instead of you know, it's not Aviam or something like that. So just a slight difference there.
There's no Matika in the A because it can't possibly be a modern.
Right. Can't possibly be a modern in this case, so it's kind of all point on it. So you don't really need it there. Okay, then Ach is identical to Av. Av and Ach are just exactly the same. You just take the base out for a case in, you got it. Construct wise and everything. That is a little bit different. Just a little bit shorter stem, but as far as the endings go, they're all pretty much the same. So once you learn that system of endings for that, just see the learn the modifications you have for all three. Then the plural forms of Ach are noteworthy. We've got Achim for the absolute plural. So we get a reduction to Papak there from Kamas. And then the construct is Ache. That's always changing itself. Then you get Achai, Acheka, Achai, and so forth. Once you see that first change, it's pretty straightforward all the way through. Except you've got Sagol in a couple of these, but in it's Ekau instead of Achau, as you might expect it. Main problem there, I guess. So all these exceptions. No problem. Any other questions about this chapter? Stated verbs or... Like I said, the test is going to be primarily emphasizing not their paradigm, the grammatical question. Okay, lesson 22, imperfect. Here again, just another memorization of paradigm. So far, this chapter, at least, all you have is a strong verb. Yikto, tikto, 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 tikto. Again, as I caution you, be sure you remember what the paradigm represents, which form the switch, which direction they go. So get them reversed and start off with yikto as a first person instead of third person, something like that. It'd be very tragic. Especially since the numbers don't line up. If it was totally symmetrical, you'd at least get the middle ones right. But it's not totally symmetrical because you only got five forms in each column, that the first person forms are common. So that can get you in kind of nasty trouble if you forget the way the paradigm goes. So imperfect, though, deals with both prefix and suffix. All of them have a prefix and some of them have suffixes also. So yikto from kata, you've got a prefix and a suffix, just a prefix, excuse me. And tikto prefix, prefix, tikto is prefix and suffix. Ekto, which is a prefix. Yiktabu, tiktovna, tiktabu, tiktovna, nikto. You have prefixes on all of those and suffixes in the first, all but the last one here. Okay, now. Nothing much else to say about that, I guess. The verse thus far in the vocabulary is like a spectacular kata or the following, so you've got the car and there's a whole list of these that are just strong verbs in quite the same way. Meaning of the imperfect. You've got three basic translations here. Future, just a simple future, he will write for a kata, he quote, he will write. You've got habitual or customary action, he writes as a matter of custom, or he used to write as a matter of custom, or he will write as a matter of custom. That can be past, present, or future, but a habitual, progressive, customary action, a customary type of action. And then you have a modal, which is a little bit harder to describe, but often gets you into subjunctives, opposites, things of that nature that they're not formally categorized this way. They use the same forms, but because of features of the clause relationships, you begin to get the sentence. We've already run into, in the ensuing chapters, we've run into a few words, like pen, less, such, and then using the imperfect, that gets you into this type of modal use automatically. So it's mainly derived from the kinds of words that are following, the kinds of words that introduce the clause, kind of structures and derivatives of clauses. And you'll find that the information is there, it's just not in the place that you've been used to looking for it. In other words, in Greek, you're used to looking at the verb for all the information. The verb form gives you all that information, mood, voice, tense, the whole works. In Hebrew, the verb form doesn't give you all the information. The verb form gives you some of it, but then clause relationships and other things give you other parts of the information. So it's not like it's all just a big game where anything goes and you don't know what it's really saying. There are clues to give you the information, but they're found in different places. And admittedly, in some places, there aren't enough clues to do anything with. But most often, there's enough information to make you quite confident in the way you're translating. Okay, so we'll have to leave that modal type of an idea for more embellishment later on. Imperfect is negated with lo. So lo yikto will be, he will not write. And of course, as we've already seen, though, the imperative can also be negated with lo plus the imperfect, which means that lo yikto, he will not write. This wouldn't be too bad for the third person form, but if it were a second person form, if you wanted to say, you will not write, for example, lo tikto, then you might have an ambiguity of either a man making a statement, you will not write, as a prediction of the future, or a command, you will not write, you don't write. So you have to kind of go by context a little bit to decide the difference on those. And again, it's not as bad as it looks. In poetry, the negative all is also found. And again, we saw all as a negative for the imperative. But in poetry, you'll see all. You'll see that much in prose. Okay, any questions on the imperfect? Just a matter of remembering those forms, I guess, is all I can say. And then know basically what the translations out would be. So you should be familiar with these three the way that the impervious could be translated. Even though you don't know a lot of the details about C, you should at least know its existence.
In our second year, we're going to gain a proficiency as we receive the imperfect in the text about whether or not we should do it.
Yep. That's part of the major things in the second year. When we start the second year, we'll be dealing with these last chapters in the textbook that deal with those 10 positive relationships. And then in translating, we'll be running into it all the time. We'll have to make decisions on exactly how we're going to relate to this and so forth. So, see, that's one of the reasons we can't really get into... as early get into Hebrew translating the text in a flowing fashion as you can in Greek. Because Greek doesn't have a lot of these... Greek does almost everything with forms, specific forms of things. And so you can start reading and translating a lot earlier in Greek than you can in Hebrew because of these clause relationships. You can get a lot of information, you know, as is now, but until you really get to see a lot of examples of this mobile type of use, you might make a lot of mistakes and not know what you're looking at and so forth. And of course, with Wild Perspective, I mean, having that, those series, we would have been real stuck to try to do anything. That's why he had to alter these excerpts from Scripture in order to remove that law consecutive forms. Okay, then the dual. Nothing real profound here as far as forms are concerned. Just noting that now denoting objects which naturally occur in pairs are frequently used in dual form, the endings of which are ayim and the construct of stereo. So the construct's the same as eem plurals. When suffixes are added to the dual, the resulting form is the same as that of the eem plurals. So yadai, my two hands, and so forth. And then, of course, when adjectives are modifying, well, I guess that's coming down here at the end, when adjectives modify the dual, they're found in the plural form. In other words, you don't have a dual form for an adjective. The adjective is going to just take the plural form and modify the dual. Okay, and so he gives you a list of the common words there. Found in the dual, yad meaning hand, and regal meaning foot, and so forth. And you go through all these different things. You've had a lot of these in vocab. Some of them you haven't had yet. I don't think you've had Karen yet, horn, or kanaf, wing. Ozen, I think we had, didn't we? Here, and ayin, I'm sure we had. And yad, we should have had. So these ones that you've had in your vocabulary, you should be familiar with their dual form. But with the suffixes, they're no different than with the plural, so there's nothing really new there. In other words, you can just assume it's a normal plural, an eem plural, when it comes to the matter of putting suffixes on. Then a few expressions of time and measurement, dual, really a note. I guess you should be basically familiar with all of those, because we had Sol Orion, that was a new one, but we had that in the vocab. Cubits, I don't think we had yet, don't have to worry about that. But Ha'amayim, I think we had that with that, so yeah. I think all the rest of these you should be familiar with. Okay, and just make sure you note that adjectives modifying the dual are found in plural. So try to put a dual ending on an adjective. Any other questions there? Okay, imperfect and patak. Next chapter. And says, dative verbs of the types kaved and katon, as well as all verbs with guttural consonants in second and third group position, have patak instead of polon in the stem of the imperfect. So your stative verbs and certain other verbs, both the second and third group guttural positions, will fall into this patak type imperfect category. And basically, the paradigm is just the same as what you've seen with the imperfect before, except you've got patak in the second position instead of polon. So there's really not too much to say there. So it's yiktav instead of yiktol, or yiktav instead of yiktol, so it's katav. And if it's got a guttural in the second or third position, the same thing will happen. Then, of course, you also have to watch one other thing, and that is, if the guttural's in the second position, you have a slight difference. Well, let's see here. Yes, if the guttural's in the second position, excuse me. If the guttural's in the second position, there are some forms that would take schwa there. And you can't have schwa, you have to have katapata. So if you look at that bachar there, yivkar, TIFCAR, TIFCAR, TIFCAR-E. Notice you've got TIFCAR-E, you've got a papa, cut the papa on that tape. You can't take that chihuahua on that. And then I guess the only other place is TIFCAR-U down there in the third person masculine singular form. Third person masculine plural form. No other peculiarities that I can note here. Then a small group of verbs look exactly like katav in the perfect, which are neither stated nor with guttural root consonants, and nevertheless reflect with katav in the perfect, imperfect. So some verbs that you would expect to be whole and imperfect are katav imperfect anyway. And most important are these. Of these are shakav, to lie down, lamav, to learn. Okay, then verbs 3 olive in the imperfect. Same basic problems in the imperfect. You get the squiff and olive. So instead of a colon or a pasach in that second position, you get a comma. And the only exception to that is the places where it's shua is normal. And in the third person feminine singular and second person feminine singular, you've got ikrena. You get the goal there. So that's just an unusual thing that you just have to take note of. Okay, any questions there? It's a matter of trying to cram it all into the brain. There's no deep paradigm, that's all there is to it. But there's really nothing. If you learn the imperfect paradigm well for Chabad, then it's just a matter of making a few adjustments here. They should be too difficult, I don't think. Nouns ben and shame, bane and shame, these two nouns are similar to the singular before suffixes in that the stem vowel is reduced to shawa. So, before the suffixes, you go ahead and reduce it. A lot of other nouns don't do that. So, bini, bincha, get a little shua there because you would have had two shuas in a row. Bine, bino, but I guess there's nothing too new really here. Once you know what that stem is, then follow rules of shua as they apply and follow it right through. It says, remember that the plural of bane is banim and that of shame is shemot. So, in their plurals, one's an even, one's an old. There's no irregularity in plural forms for the final suffix. There won't be any difference than what you would expect by the rules. All right, any other questions on those on that chapter? Mm-hmm. Okay, then chapter 24, narrative sequences. Mm-hmm. None of these chapters is all that hard in themselves, putting them all together. Mm-hmm. And then adding everything else you know from before. you're supposed to know. Perfect plus imperfect. Well, narrative sequences, the peculiarity of Semitic language, the peculiarity of the Hebrew to me among Semitic languages, the narrative sequences do call them involve complementary use of two verbal conjugations, the perfect and the imperfect. Translation values given for the perfect, section 144, and imperfect, section 91, no way altered by the following discussion as long as the verb in question does not stand in one of the sequences we shall describe. So there's things that mark these sequences. We have to note those things and not apply these principles to situations where the markers aren't there. So basically, the most common series with perfect plus imperfect, starting the series with a perfect verb form, then continuing them with imperfects using a form of the conjunction, a slightly different form, wa plus a doubling. That's a wa with a plus doubling the first letter. So that's a special form of conjunction used in this case. Such sequences may continue for dozens of clauses, each of which, if it is part of the main narrative, begins with a verb and in the imperfect and with a conjunction prefix. So kam ha'ish wa'yed rosh. The man arose and saw it. Amad wa'yegra, he stood and called. And of course there may be a whole series of verbs and clauses following that. The subject need not be the same in each case, so you don't have to demand that the subject always be the same. You might have a different subject, but as long as you're continuing this temporal relationship of one sequence, one event sequence after another, you'll still go ahead and use these verb forms. So that's something to watch for. Just because you change the subject doesn't mean that you change the sequence. So Yashav Eso Ha'ekal, he sat down near the temple. Wa Yikra'u, Elau Ha'am, and the people called me. So the people is a new subject, but it's still a law consecutive form because it's a sequential narrative. He sat down near the temple, and then the people called to him, you see. So you've got a sequence, but now you've got different people performing the action, so the subject is going to change. And then it goes back to, and he hearkened to them. So Yishma El Kolam, hearkened to their voice. We've changed subject back again, but still, we're still keeping into the law consecutive series. So change of subject won't break up the series. The only thing really, we'll learn more detail in this later on, the only thing really that'll break up the series is to have something other than something else other than the verb form begin the clause. That seems to be the most important thing, is to have that verb form with the wow begin the clause. If you have something else in there beginning the clause, that can break up the sequence. For example, if you have a negation, that'll break the sequence and so forth. So that's one example we had already. Okay, form of the conjunction. This is the technical details in that are in the top of page 108. And I guess there's really nothing to say about this other than when you have a guttural that can't take dagesh, you get a compensatory lengthening of the pop-up.
That's a negative duration.
You should include resh. Resh can't take dagesh. So it'll be the guttural from resh. But the trouble is, you would never see it with resh. What's the reason for that?
Well, that's right.
Yeah, imperfect. There's no imperfect prefix as far as resh. So, you don't have to worry about it.
That's right.
So all you have is all of the resh that fall in that category.
We're so anxious to resolve ambiguities, we even make them up and knock.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Just want to be thorough. Yes.
If it did have ratio, would
it? Right. If you invented a new form in the paradigm, you know. Invent a distinction in the first person for masculine and feminine, something like that would start with ratio. Yeah.
Maybe in the millennium. Mm-hmm.
Okay, then the only other comments here. All past tense narrative in which each verb is temporally or logically consequent upon the preceding verb employs or sequence. The imperfect so used take on the tense value of the perfect and are said to be converted. The perfect value of the form wa plus imperfect became so commonplace that it may be employed even without a perfect begin the sequence. So they, in some instances you may just see it start right out with the wa consecutive form. And the context will have to tell you that.
That'd be in a passage where previously they've been using that.
Probably it would be.
I mean,
probably
it would start a whole cat or something.
No, probably not likely. In other words, like we said, everything kind of changed back to something before. Although, apparently, the reason for saying this would be that some instances you may have ended a sequence with a previous thing and broken the whole thing off and then start a new paragraph and start out with a wow consecutive form. Apparently it happens to that extent because otherwise it would be otherwise you'd just be relating it to a previous series. You never really need to do that. Something has actually broken the series up, but maybe they started a new paragraph and something has changed up and they instead of starting off with a perfect form, they'll start off with the imperfect form. You've got to take it as a perfect form.
I wonder if there would be a sense where you wouldn't take it as a perfect form.
Well, there will be instances that way, but for one thing, now you get into this problem again with the Nazarene or the vowel points, right?
Yeah.
But if you started off a sequence, or if you started off a sentence with wa instead of wa, and just had the normal form of the conjunction, then you'd know that that wasn't reading in the series. That was just, conjoined to another verb or something.
And there's also the dagesh.
Right. The dagesh would be involved too.
Right.
The dagesh. But of course, that was added by the matter.
It's stickier.
We're all dagesh
added by the matter.
I don't know that for sure. I think in some cases before they may have actually doubled the letter, put the rogue letter down twice.
You're dealing with different alphabet. Mm-hmm. Some Nazarenes were playing.
See, the older Hebrew alphabet is different than this Aramaic type alphabet that we're using. This is actually an Aramaic alphabet. So, We'd have to look. It seems like I've seen some old writing with which they didn't have it. They actually doubled the letters. But I don't know if they did that in all of the forms.
I think
on a law consecutive form or something, they may not do that.
The older Hebrew script, they call it Phoenician script, is really a lot like Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot like the modern Hebrew alphabet.
The cursive.
Yeah. Cursive test. It's actually a lot closer to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they admit to the same kinds of.
Yeah, I think though in lots of words, I'm not so sure on these prefixes, suffixes, and that kind of thing. But when it comes to a word that has two letters in the middle or something, a double in the middle, there's often the double, the old, you know, two letters there, and then they condense that down to a dougie. So I'm not sure if the Masoretes did that or just how that worked in. So we have a problem there as far as making assumptions that the Masoretes are okay on this. Okay. Now, because every Hebrew narrative then contains a series of clauses beginning with and plus a verb, it is obviously impossible to translate literally and have acceptable English. The student should make generous use of subordinating conjunctions such as adverbial clauses and participial modifiers as in his English translation, taking care only to preserve the proper logical temporal sequence of the Hebrew. There's again that philosophy that comes forth, and you can take it for what it's worth. Depends on what you're trying to do again with your translation. And the more you take liberties, the more you run the risk of just injecting something into the text that's not there. And that's, of course, a concern we always have. So I can see his problem in that it gets rather laborious in English to keep using and this type of thing. But again, one needs to consider that, you know, you want to try to get reflect some of the flavor of the Hebrew to an English reader too, a little bit. At least I like to do that. Maybe I'm just biased because I like Hebrew.
We have to take it up with the English department.
Yeah, the English department probably wouldn't like it.
The continual plague of the modern writing is in.
Yeah. Well, I don't mind if you use a comma once in a while, but don't go off into some other place and start to reword the whole thing, so you start injecting all kinds of things back there. That's the main thing. Okay, then B, the imperfect plus perfect sequence used with all the meanings of the imperfect, whether future or habitual durative. So this means that whatever that imperfect form that starts off the sequence is, whatever meaning it's got in the context will be carried through to the perfect. So if you're starting off with a sacred, making it it's a future form, and the context is future, then all the perfects following that in the sequence will be translated as future. If it's modal, if it's getting a subjunctive type of thing, in other words, if you see a situation where you see pen or something, so you see left T, do this and do this and do this, you may see the first one would be in the imperfect, and then the following, you might start a sequence of things, and the following ones would be in a converted perfect. So, but they'll all be translated in the same modal fashion. Or if it's habitual gerative, the same situation would apply. The conjunction before the perfect is normal and pointed according to regular rules set given in section 46. So on the perfect ones, you're not going to use a wa, so it'll just be wa. Maybe it's a wa consecutive instead of wa consecutive. Instead of calling wa. The point is, be sure you note that difference so that you don't make a mistake. When you're putting it on a perfect form and converting it to imperfect, you're going to use the same normal form of the conjunction. So we have Yimsa Otho Gwinatan Lo Et Haketa. Yimsa starting out with an imperfect form, he will find him, and then Gwinatan going back to a perfect form. Notice the form of the wuf here is just normal. So with no dagesh. There's no dagesh, there's no double. It's just wuf and shua. So, but it's been translated, and we'll give him the money. Now they gave him the money. Okay, then they will burn the city, Yisrafu et ha'ir, Wilakadu et ha'am, starting with an imperfect, going to a perfect again, kind of serious. They will burn the city and they will take captive the people. If the first imperfect is used in the habitual sentence, it's carried through the sequence. So Yikra el ha'navi wa'amar, he used to call to the prophet and say. So we're taking that say there as a habitual also, because the sense of it started out that way. Note that when a negative clause is inserted in the sequence, the verb is no longer first. The verb of the negative clause is then in its normal non-converted form. So you can break up the series by, if you use negation, you're really stuck. You've got to break the series. In effect, you have to go back to the normal unconverted form. And then, but you could immediately pick up the series again right afterwards. So it's not that big of a problem. But the problem is that another word coming first, the negation always precedes the verb. So that you know what's happening. And so there's an example. Halakhu wayikru'u elau willo shama. You start off with a perfect, halakhu, they went. You go to a converted imperfect, wayikru'u elau, and they went and called to him. So they went first and then they called to him. But he did not hear. We've got willo, now you've got a negation in the next clause, and then shama is going back to the perfect form again. You can't use an imperfect form now because you remove the conversion factor by putting something else first in the sentence.
And in the pickup, you go back to imperfect.
Exactly. Now, if you want to say anything after that, you go right back to the imperfect again, the law converted imperfect. Because now you can effectively say that my shama now has started a new series. But that now that's a perfect, then you can say this starts with a series for me. That's a perfect, now I'll put an imperfect on and keep going. And if you get another negation, then you go back, you know, on the negated form, you go back to the regular perfect form and then start your next series. And of course, things happen in the reverse too, with the imperfect starting with an imperfect. And then if you get a perfect, if you get a negation, then you have to go back to the imperfect again. And you can go back to the perfect again to start the next series. So
would you always see that if the series was intended to continue, you would always see willow instead of low shamar. You can start
your
thought by leaving the wo off of the negation. Kind of like,
right,
he's not here, and because of this and this happened, and you're off on another topic.
Yeah, you could have a period, and then the next sentence starts with low. But remember that next sentence starting with low, you can't use a converted form of any kind. Of course, you've now stopped the series.
What
anyway.
I'm saying is that in the one sense, it's the resumption of the same series because of the wo lo, whereas in another sense, it could represent some kind of transitional break.
Yes, it could. And that's going to have to be dependent largely on what you're trying to say. And if you're trying to say it, make a total break with it, you know, then you'll start, and then the next series will be a completely different series. It's just more of a semantic connection.
Are there other breaks that wouldn't have the word so officially either way? You know, other ways to break the sequence up?
Oh, yes, there will be. We'll get to those.
So then the question is whether you had some kind of it in there or some kind of relative pronoun. You have a question of whether it occurs to the immediate or whether it
See, what's going to happen is we're going to get to later on situations in which you'll have a narrative going along, but then you'll have a subordinate clause or something. Something that's not part, you know, of the main sentence, but it's a subordinating clause. And that clause, now you've got a question of, you're going to introduce a subordinating conjunction of some sort, and that's going to break up any sequence that you had going. But now you're going to be taking a diversion to go into the subordinate clause, and you're going to come back up here. And then what will often happen is you'll kick in with the law converted forms again and go on your going merry way with the series. But again, because the subordinating conjunction is going to come before the verb form, to indicate that subordinate clause, then you've broken it. So we'll be doing lots of things with that.
So then there could be some question of whether you've gone, is there a question of whether they've gone back and resumed another sequence yet, or?
Well, sometimes they'll go back and resume the sequence. Sometimes they may not go back and resume the sequence. They may start a whole new different train of thought.
So they can tangent off of your subordinating clause and build a whole other story.
Oh yeah,
you could do consecutive series.
Mm-hmm.
And so your line would go down, and now you dip down.
Yeah.
And now you start in a consecutive series.
You can start a new series
and there'd be
in
a debate,
subordinated clause.
Debate whether you're on the same clause here or whether you're off to Liberia or something.
Yeah. you have to use some judgment as far as meaning goes. They're going to be careful. There are ways to try to keep things straight. I mean, it's not all a matter of hindsight, but you've got to keep your eyes open and watch it from the same. I guess the worst possible case would be a series in which you have a number of subordinate clauses that themselves had numerous verbal adjuncts to them and a series instruction.
Fortunately, Paul didn't write in Hebrew.
Yeah, right. If Paul had written in Hebrew, we'd have real trouble. But mostly historical narrative is too simple to do a lot of that kind of thing.
Can you, for effect, in the perfect sequence, translate everything in the future?
Imperfect.
You get him and I mean he will.
Yes, you can do that. You can put the will on all of those. See, because that's being understood anyway. He will find him and give him the money in English. That give is still being understood as future form. Even without the feeling, it's just that when you have a series of verbs in English, we can eliminate the auxiliary. You see, he will do this and this and this and this and this and this. You know, and we can eliminate repeating the will after each one. Just kind of streamlining it. It's almost a similar effect in that the first one is covering the rest. And like these sequences, the meaning of the first form is being applied to the rest. So there's something somewhat analogous, not obviously not the same thing, but it's, but if you want to be precise, you know, you could say, and he will find him and we'll give him the money and so forth. Just make sure that I can see that you've got this idea of a future form in all of them, or whatever you start out with. If you started out habitual jurors, then you keep that set going.
He will be finding him and will be giving
him. Will be giving him and so forth, yeah. That gets a little awkward, you know, but. Okay, any other questions on that?
No questions.
Yeah.
This only applies to the slow breaking of the series. Only applies to the perfect, imperfect series.
No, it would really, he didn't mention it, but it would apply to the other too. In other words,
it's kind of strange on the other one, you're already using the perfect and the imperfect purposes are already using the perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So when you break the series, what is the switch? How do you know the switch gap?
Well, low plus perfect.
Yeah, well, see, it kind of depends on what you started out. See, if you're starting out imperfect plus perfect, if you're starting out imperfect and you're talking about the future, and you want to say, well, let's look at this again. He will find him and will not give him the money, and they will burn the city and take captive the people. Make that all one series. Then we would find, he will find him. I guess I want to make my negation the third verb down. He will find him and give him the money, and they will not burn the city and will not take captive the people. So we want to say that. Okay. You start off with a imperfect form to set your time. So yimsa, so he will find him, and then you go to a converted perfect with nasa and give him the money, and they will not burn the city. Then I would have will lo. Now that I've got a negation there, I'll have to keep nasi. But what I could have done is gone to a perfect form there too. You see, instead of saying yes for food now, because I'm combining two sentences that they only had that they had separately. But I could have just said wa sarafu, just had the perfect form there. But if I say wolo, then I've got to go to yes for food again, the normal imperfect form, because then my lo has broken up the meaning of that sequence. If I want to make sure I'm keeping in the future, I've got to go back now to yes for food. But then I can go following that with lakadu, get it perfect again. So the same kind of thing would happen.
It goes the other way, than where you started out, when you started out with your perfect,
mm-hmm.
and you're running along the imperfect.
Right.
Okay. Then you would break, you'd have your wa plus imperfect, and then you'd have wolo and a perfect.
Right.
And then you'd start back up with your wa.
Right. Exactly. That's what happens here in this example here. They start off with perfect, halaku, wa yikra, there you go to a converted imperfect, and then walo, shama, you've got to go back to the perfect again. Now if you wanted to continue that sequence, then you could go back to those imperfects, provided that there was nothing else coming between the verb and the beginning.
Do you have a theory of negation?
Mm-hmm. Right. A series of negations is going to have to keep the proper sense of the verbs each time. In other words, if you want to say willo shama, willo kasab, willo harad, willo, you know, in other words, you have to keep perfect all the way through there.
But is there any way, if you wanted to have a kind of a mini law consecutive,
mm-hmm.
he did not do this, and this kind of...
Oh, I see. They have not applied to many things. They don't do that in Hebrew. They repeat it all the time.
Either this or this.
Yeah. So they just go below. And I think probably the reason for that is that they did that, they could get themselves in trouble with these people.
Yeah, I was going to say, if that happened,
you'd rather be redundant.
They only have hands and they don't have more.
When you do get something like left and so forth, you know, like that 10, you get kind of a big, you get made of paper, you get the wrong
structure.
So they have an obvious thing to kill him.
Right.
There's something almost analogous to that, like with a 10. You'll say, he did this left. Lest they do this and this and this, you don't have to. The left is almost getting a kind of a negation element in it.
Yeah.
It's a quasi negative.
Yeah.
And there, you don't have to say 10 after the 41. The 10 would apply to everything that followed.
Would that break the narrative sequence?
Well, only the first form. You could resume another one. In other words, it would be another mini sequence within it. And you could do that there. But that was low. You can't just put a low on one.
So the 10 would break an imperfect chain.
Oh yeah, it will. It will.
And you'd have to go back to perfect for that, but then you can start up with perfect.
Yeah.
And it could
usually though,
this and this and this, or else here, then we could go back.
Yeah, it's going to break the sequence. You have to deal with an imperfect sequence. Started with a perfect and then you go perfect. Then you put 10. So 10 is going to automatically take it perfect. And so then you go imperfect again and then start it. And if you're going to continue a series of the 10, you know, if you follow 10 there, then you go back to perfect again. But then if you want to get back into the main line again, back in the main front, you know, you've got to make some other changes.
Don't yell at this guy and kill him. It could be don't both yell and kill this guy, or don't yell at this guy, but
kill him.
Because the way we use the and.
Yeah. Well, that ambiguity would be resolved if they wouldn't fight a little bit. You're going to have to set up the pictures here, so
everybody
can put
that
in.
Probably about
2-3. It's just meant for him.
I was looking for the class.
I
just happened.
And then
give it to
him. One of the
best
yeah.
ones. We can get it. You got to bring it down. Get it everything.
We're not going to get the carpet. We want to make it
as a grand library.
We want to set it up to make it look like he's got books in the background. And
yeah. You have to use the liberal sources on that wall.
Hopefully that they won't be
as blurred enough.
Well, make sure the desk is over there, right about under Kyle and Delich, and
those gold ones look real good.
Well, you ought to pull a couple of the make sure that there's a something that's identifiable with the Bible back there. Pull a couple of them off the shelf.
Otherwise, it looks just like a public library.
What does this guy do? You know, like some pastor's library is denomination.